And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slammin' Jam on the Athletic NBA Show.
Yo, it's Zach Harper, host of the Basketball Buds, right here on the Athletic NBA Show. Join me and the fellas, Waz, Trey, Jay, and Dave, for a new episode every Monday morning. What's Jay King going to say that lights the podcast on fire? What's that problematic envelope that Waz is going to keep pushing every single Monday? Tune in to find out. That's every Monday morning right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Coming up on today's show, we look back at some of the deals from last week's deadline and see if we've changed our opinion on them. We also talk about overscouting March Madness and some crunch time issues that are prevailing in today's NBA.
This is Nerdish, You Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday, and that means, you guessed it, it's Nerdish, She Wrote. I'm Dave Dufour, joined as I am every single week by Seth and Mo. What is up, fellas? I know everyone is ready to get to April. It means we're closer to the playoffs. It's April 1st as we're recording this. No April Fool's jokes today, though, right?
I had them all lined up, Dave. Let me just throw them out now.
They're the worst. They're the worst. I'm sorry.
I was going to tell you guys, you know, I've changed my mind on the Elam ending, the whole thing. Like, I was ready to go, Dave.
I'm not going to lie.
Well, Happy New Year's.
I'm still not entirely certain Roy Williams is retiring.
No. Why would you ever announce anything on April Fool's Day? And also, it's also the one day of the year we all decide to be critical about what we see on the internet. Like, come on. What are we doing?
We need to treat every day like it's April Fool's Day on the internet. Anyway, all right. So, guys, we've had a week now since the trade deadline. We've seen some of these guys playing with their new teams. We've seen nobody new playing for Orlando. They did get a big win against the Clippers, thanks to Michael Carter-Williams. But after a week, are your initial impressions vastly different than the way you feel today? Like, I kind of feel pretty much the same, and so far things have worked out pretty closely to how I thought they might, but I'm really curious about you guys. Mo, I mean, we talked Nuggets
too much
on the ding this week, and you were like, oh my god, I've already talked about the Nuggets so much. But the Nuggets really do look like a different team just by plugging in one guy.
They do, and we'll see tonight. Unfortunately, it'll be when people are listening to it, it'll be after the fact, but they'll play the Clippers tonight, and that's kind of really their first big test of this group, even though I don't think Paul George will be playing. But it's the first real, like, okay, this is a really good team that they're going to be playing against, and a team they might have to face in the playoffs. And we'll see how Aaron Gordon holds up guarding Kawhi Leonard and things like that. So we're going to get kind of their first test, but it's looked great the first two games. And I mean, that was never a trade I was going to be worried about.
I'm glad you mentioned Aaron Gordon guarding Kawhi, because see, this is the important thing to remember. The offensive end of the court really wasn't the problem for them. And that fit just makes total sense to me with Aaron Gordon. But the defensive end is the part that I think people have been overlooking, Seth, because Paul Millsap is kind of a shell of himself. You know, the last 2 years we've watched this decline, And now he's been put into a position where he's playing more of a backup five. He's going to play probably quite a bit with Aaron Gordon out there in smaller lineups. And I think by doing that and shuffling in, you know, a more versatile defender at this point in his career, they have really allowed the ceiling for their defense to go up a notch.
I think it's that. And it's also something I think for 2 years we've been saying, what are they short when it comes to playoff? And it's you mentioned like Aaron Gordon guarding Kawhi. They haven't had a big wing defender, with the possible exception of Torrey Craig, who, you know, gave away enough on offense that he, you know, it wasn't clear that he was a net positive for them. And now just having a guy who can incredibly, you know, guard the Kawhis, the Paul Georges, you know, Jeremy Grant did okay on LeBron in last year's playoffs, but obviously replacing that was important. And, you know, that allows Michael Porter Jr. to not have to take on a tough defensive assignment. It allows, probably allows them to play a smaller backcourt more, allows them to play, you know, Jamal Murray and Monte Morris together a little bit more. And these are all good things for, you know, Denver and their versatility as a team, you know, heading into playoff matchups.
Mo, how do you feel about how they're using Gordon to start? Like, it seems like a lot of times after a trade for a player like Aaron Gordon, who is, you know, he's been number one or two option in Orlando for the last few years now, probably two behind Vooch, but often is running the offense, initiating the offense. In Denver so far, they're not running a ton of plays for him. They're really letting him kind of come in, feel his way through the offense, learn how to play around those guys. You feel like that's a smart move?
No, I think it. You have to. I mean, part of it is, listen, here's the thing too. Mike Malone has to know what he has in Aaron Gordon. It's one thing to scout a player. It's one thing to always get ready to coach against them and watch them on tape and things like that. It's once you get them, now you start understanding the things. Where does he like the ball? How does he like to move? Oh, he can do this. Oh, I thought he could do this, but no, he can't. Or he thinks he can do this. We need to get him to not do this. And it's all of those things. It's the small institutional knowledge that's going to take time for Mike Malone to figure out, you know? And this is why kind of we always talk about in-season trades are actually difficult for coaches, because you got to, during season, try to figure out what this guy can do and what's the best way to utilize him. So now they're figuring it out on the fly. So I think this is the perfect role for him. He's not a guy you need to run plays for. I think, you know, his ability to cut and all of that is going to help with a passer like Jokic and make things easier. His ability to make that next pass is going to be really big for that team offensively. And he's a smart player, so he's going to be able to flow into these things pretty easily. And the Nuggets make it easy with kind of how they play.
Well, and the way they move the ball, and they're constantly looking for guys cutting on the backside. I mean, you've added another lob threat. Right now, you've got Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon, who are both very physical and smart, adept cutters, who also are pretty good at catching lobs. And then Michael Porter is a flamethrower from deep. So I don't know, man. Like, that offense, I trust it in the playoffs. The defense is, I think, where all the questions lie and where they have all year. Aaron Gordon, though, to me, like, I've already watched him defending well in their system. You know, he's a smart helper. He doesn't overcommit. You very rarely see him get burned backdoor. And I think those kind of little things on the margins are going to be huge. And then when you add that to adding a tremendous athlete, I mean, it's just a huge upgrade in the four spot in athleticism right now. And I mean, I don't know, man, the Nuggets, I think they got a shot to make the finals because of Aaron Gordon.
I mean, it really comes down to Lakers' health. That's, for me, the thing. If the Lakers aren't healthy going into the playoffs, and it's really just two guys. If LeBron James and Anthony Davis are not 100% going into the finals, it's a wide open field to me.
I think that that's even selling Denver a little short. I think that before this trade, they kind of needed that little bit of luck to go this way. I and everyone else would still pick the healthy Lakers over the Nuggets in a 7-game series, but you got to give them more of a puncher's chance now than even against the healthy Lakers. Like, you know, we saw it in the conference finals last year. That was not really, it was more competitive than a 5-game series, but it wasn't like super competitive. And I think that they are better able to hold up this year than they would have been before the trade.
Well, think about the playoffs and how much we say it rests on individual matchups so often. Well, you look at the Lakers, and if they're healthy, let's just say 100% health, they have the two best players in a series against the Nuggets. The Nuggets might have the next four, though. You know, Jokic, Murray, Porter, Gordon might be the next four best players. So, I mean, there's a little bit more balance there this year than I think last year. Remember, Jeremy Grant wasn't who Jeremy Grant showed us he was in the playoffs when the playoffs started last year. So, like, that was a complete surprise to us, too.
But they're two are so damn good. You know, it's like when you say the next four, like, I get it, and that's a great point, but it's also like, yeah, but those two, it's like, meh.
Sure. Yeah, they're going to – I still think they can coast if they come back healthy.
Honestly, you might even say the Nuggets have the next six best. Like, you start talking about who would you
– Monte in there?
Monte Morris, Will Barton, like, where do you put, like, KCP in there?
I think Schroeder, Dennis Schroeder is up there in that range.
You guys will probably disagree, but I think Kuzma's up there in that range. Like, I think he's been so good defensively, and he's shooting the ball really well this season and things like that. Like, I think it's been impressive how good he's been defensively, because that's something I was not expecting at all from Kuzma. Even after he did it in the playoffs, I was like, yeah, that was just the playoffs, but he's brought it over.
I never thought I'd hear Mo give Lakers propaganda.
No, it's not propaganda. It's not. That was not propaganda. Come on, man. I know. You know I'm anti.
Usually it's only USC.
That's
propaganda.
All I push. That's all
okay,
I push.
Okay, what about the – yeah. What about the Bulls, guys? Because, you know, they got Nikola Vucevic. They added a second All-Star. Look, he's a very good player. That's a big-time move. But they also got Daniel Theis, which is – you know, when you look at the Celtics center rotation now, they started Mo Wagner the other night. That's not great. I think the Bulls made a really great move, and I know a lot of people are knocking them for the draft picks, but, you know, at some point, man, you have to shit or get off the pot. And the Bulls decided, hey, let's get down to business. And not only, I think, did it make them better this year, I think they're going to be better next year because of this, because they're going to have a full season of Vooch next to LaVine. When LaVine figures out how to play with a guy like Vooch, I mean, this is probably the best player he's ever played with. Can we say that?
I mean, he played with Towns for.
Okay, yeah. But I think Vooch is better right now than Towns, you know. Towns theoretically is good, but I think Vooch is actually a good player.
I can't believe you're taking these shots at
Andrew
Wiggins.
I think this is a big deal for the Bulls. I think we all can believe that. But I think the Bulls, I think this was a good move for the Bulls, and I'm never going to hammer a team for actually trying to get good players instead of theoretical good players. And I think that if you're the Bulls and you feel like it's important to make the playoffs this year, which why the hell wouldn't it be? You haven't made the playoffs in forever. This is a great move for them.
I mean, it hasn't led to great results thus far. But I didn't really think it was about this year as much. Just the standings are so jumbled, and yeah, maybe they make the playoffs, maybe they don't. But this is as much about, they weren't going to do better than to sign Nikola Vucevic for 2 years, $46 million, with their free agency money this summer. They just weren't. They weren't going to come close. So by making this trade, they've sort of pre-spent that money and adding a better player than they could have possibly added. Now it costs them some stuff, the draft picks more than really the players. I think that Wendell Carter is a player that I liked coming into the draft, and obviously is a guy who needs a reset. But I think it's too narrow to look at this like through the lens of this year's performance for Chicago. Now, like it or don't. You know, that it depends on how much you're a championship or bust guy. And I think we on the outside tend to think far more that way than actual teams whose livelihoods depend on this stuff do, for better or worse.
I didn't mind the trade. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with them trying to go for it and take swings and things like that. For me, it's really what comes next, right? Like, okay, LaVine and Vucevic should be able to, at the very minimum, get you in the play-in tournament for the next couple of years, right? Like, they probably can get you six.
That would be a massive disappointment, I think, if that's the
hence
best they do.
Very, yeah. very minimum. Yeah. Very, very minimum. Yeah. You didn't let me get to the best case, Seth. You just always jump in the gun. Like, I just hope the cat attacks you right now. you know, the best case, you know, is this gets some home court advantage in the playoffs in the next couple seasons. Probably not this year. I think I'm with Seth. This is more of a view move forward for looking forward to next season and so on. But for me, it's what's the next move? Are they, you know, I don't. Off the top of my head, don't know their cap space numbers or anything like that, but can they make a run at Lonzo Ball in restricted free agency or something? Like what's coming next? I like those two pieces together, but I need more for them to be championship or kind of level stuff. And I don't know if Ball gets you there, but I like that they're going for it, you know, and it's almost like they are kind of trading places with Orlando being like, all right, let's it's our turn on the treadmill of mediocrity.
I think they could use another guy who can create off the dribble, right? Like, that's the thing that they're really missing. They need, like, a second banana who's a wing or a guard. And Pat Williams might wind up being that guy. It's early to tell, right? Like, we don't know yet. This summer, I would love to see them go out and get someone that moves Satoransky to the bench. I think having Satoransky come off the bench would be great for them. I mean, that means you've really upgraded that position. But they're not missing a ton. You know, they've got Thad Young, who, I mean, there's a reason why every team wanted to trade for him at the deadline last week. I love, obviously, Vucevic. Having Daniel Theis come off the bench, they were playing Theis and Vuce together.
That was a little weird, I thought, last night.
It was weird, but Theis's ability to at least take those shots, and Vuce is a good three-point shooter, it makes it a little less clunky. It's more on the defensive end.
Better than Boston playing Tristan Thompson and Theis together.
Better than Boston playing Tristan Thompson, period. Oh, but
fair.
That's all.
Well, yeah, because two useful players is better than just one, right? So I like the moves, and I love the Troy Brown Jr. pickup. That's going to be huge for them next year. Like, the Bulls are exciting, right? Like, they have like a much brighter future, and I think a large part of it was because of this one trade.
It's
now, how do we feel about Orlando? You see, because this is the tricky part, right? Because my natural tendency is to say, okay, well, they had really, really bad injury luck this year. They would have likely made the playoffs if they had stayed healthy, I think. I think that's a safe assumption to make. They lost three good players.
Yeah.
And we can split hairs, especially this season. I mean, who knows? But they had some bad injury luck, and this is a team that has eschewed tanking for the most part in this run, and now they're clearly tanking. Right? They're trying to get the best draft pick they can get. They made these moves. They you know, now have a war chest. What does their future look like? I mean, this summer they're hoping for the number one pick and Cade Cunningham, obviously. But then what?
Well, I think this has been a franchise that's. It's like, hey, we need a superstar, not a star, a superstar, you know, and they had guys that tried to fill that role, Aaron Gordon, Vucevic, and all of that. But they're not superstars. Like, they need that player that you get in the draft with one or two and go like, OK, this is our guy. Like, we're riding him for the next 8 years or however long with restricted free agency. Math not being my strong suit. That's why we have Seth. But we're riding him with this franchise. He's going to be our face. We're going to go. Let's get behind him and go. Like, they got a bunch of nice pieces around them when they're healthy. You know, Markelle Fultz has shown flashes. Jonathan Isaac's one healthy, and I hope he can stay healthy for a long period. Looked like not only an all defensive player, almost looks like a guy that can be a candidate for all defensive player of the year at some point. You know, they have like small pieces around, but they need the one guy. They need that engine, that thing to make it go. And I think that's what they're looking for. And that's why they got a tank.
Here's my concern. They're stuck in the rebuild cycle. And even though they've had some successful playoff runs here, right? Like they've made the playoffs a couple years. Jonathan Isaac's extension is about to kick in, coming off another knee injury. Markelle Fultz has an extension about to kick in. Now, this isn't a team that's spending a ton of money in free agency. For some reason, people don't want to live near Disney. But they are in a position where they do have all these draft assets, and they have good young players. It's just that the path forward for them just seems littered with bad luck. When I look at this extension that John Isaac signed, it's a fair extension if he doesn't get hurt. But the fact that he got hurt, it immediately makes that contract iffy, doesn't it?
Yes, but after next year, they're in a spot where they don't have a ton of like stuff backed up. And that's as much why it was time to hit the reset button now, is they kind of kept these moves trying to get a little better, and locked themselves into a 40-win team. And then two pieces get hurt and you have no way to get better. And, you know, guys are starting to age out. Guys are, you know, Fournier obviously was not going to resign there, it seems like. Aaron Gordon quite publicly didn't want to be there anymore. So at a certain point, you just got to say, okay, we really wanted to see what we had here. Reality kind of slapped us in the face. We have to get worse before we get better. There's just no other way to do it because, you know, we've got these, you know, the random Terrence Ross contract on the books that for the next couple of years that keeps us from doing stuff. We have, you know, Vucevic makes a lot of money. You've got these extensions kicking that you just mentioned that on their own are fine, but when you start stacking them with these other eight-figure contracts, now you're up at, you know, you're up at 100, 110 million and nothing much to show for it. So I think getting a jump start on it by doing it in season maybe even accelerates their timeline by a year. Now it's still a 2-3-4 year timeline, but they you know, it's the Shawshank line, get busy living, get busy dying. Like,
yeah,
you know, that they were going a certain way with this roster. So they flipped it and let's try again.
Well, let's look at the bright side. Okay. I don't know how you guys feel about Cole Anthony. We didn't get a huge look at him, you know, at UNC or really this season, but I thought he showed flashes this year. And I think Steve Clifford is a hell of a point guard coach. So I think Cole Anthony is going to wind up being a pretty good player for them. We all know how strongly I feel about Markel Fultz. And I think that guy has got some real dynamic playmaking. And as long as he comes back healthy, it's a great situation for them. John Isaac is, you know, what, 22 years old. And if he's healthy coming back from that knee, you look around, they picked up RJ Hampton at the deadline. That's another player that I think is going to be really good. They've made some good moves here. They've made some good draft picks. It's just, I think they're just missing that one guy. And so if you were going to put in your chips and try to move up in this draft or try to tank for a better position, this was the draft to do it. The next couple of years, right? Like, this is the perfect time to tank. So I think Orlando kind of pulled the ripcord, you know, on their playoff hopes at the right time. I mean,
there weren't any playoff hopes. They were already the way they were trending this season.
They were hoping.
No, they weren't.
They were still hoping for play-in.
But look at their record. They weren't even anywhere near the play-in at the point when they made the trade. It was, you know, like they're not. They were tanking by accident.
They're three games behind Chicago.
Yeah, they got a couple of wins. They beat Clippers. We went into it, Dave. No, but like they were, they kind of just were almost tanking by accident. Now it's on purpose.
The choice was made for them for this season. And then realizing that, you know, like we just said, it was the end of the line for this group. So rather than just kind of let it peter out, let's, you know.
I got one trade I want to talk about though, Dave. So sorry, Seth.
Okay.
I'm cutting you off.
That's okay.
Everybody's been going in on the Miami Heat and how big of a trade Nemanja Bjelica has been and all it's going to be for this team. Like, I was lukewarm when I think you said it during the live pod, but like I just don't feel it, man. Like, I don't feel like he's, I know what he did in Minnesota. I know Sacramento wasn't using him that much and all of that stuff. I just don't think that trade's really going to move the needle for that team.
It might, right? It depends on the rest of the team, but he's a better player than the perception of him is. I mean, he's got some of that Sacramento Kings. Well, I'm talking about
even in Minnesota, he's just not. Mm-hmm. I won't be surprised if he gets DMPs come playoff time.
Well, and it wouldn't shock me either. But I will say he's a pretty good player that kind of fills that Jay Crowder role pretty nicely because he will shoot. He's a really good defender. He's big. I mean, he could play small ball five for them.
Did you say he's a really good defender?
He's a good defender.
All right.
Yeah, he's a good defender. He's a good defender.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's an okay
and
defender.
The metrics back it up. He's an a good okay defender. He's not Draymond Green.
Nobody is. I'm not even saying Draymond Green. Guys, Draymond
being pedantic here.
But I mean, but good being a good defender is
Draymond didn't
is,
even
is
Draymond.
Putting it, I think, a little bit high. I just don't think that
he's a good defender.
That he's an okay defender. It's just a trade I'm not really as like everybody was like, oh, it's not Oladipo. It's Nemanja. Like, that's going to be the big piece for them. I'm like, nah, dog. It's not. You know, the most important thing for Miami is Goran Dragic. He needs to be healthy. Mm-hmm. That's it. If whatever is going to happen in Miami, it's going to be based on Goran Dragic's health.
Well, no, they Dragic and Butler and Bam. They need all three of those guys.
Yeah, I'm just assuming those guys will be fine because they've been fine. It's Dragic who's been in and out of this lineup where I'm like, God damn.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm right. There we go. Take a shot.
Okay. Has the national championship game been played yet? I'm not sure.
No. It's next. Okay. Week. It's Monday.
Okay.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, you know, it is March Madness time, and I've had no time to watch any of it. But it does bring up an interesting topic for us because we often talk about how front offices and, you know, coaching staffs make mistakes, and a lot of it has to do with recency bias. And there's no better example of recency bias than the NCAA tournament. And I know that you guys, you know, working for teams – you spent a lot of time working on the draft. I mean, we've talked about the hours and hours of film that Mo has had to cut the night before the draft and you know, the weeks leading up to the draft as you're getting ready for the playoffs. So I want to talk about over-scouting the NCAA tournament because it seems like it happens less than it used to, but it certainly still happens, guys.
Yes. I think the biggest danger is not so much that the kind of the dedicated scouts kind of overindulge in the NCAA. It's such a high salience moment that it's not the first time, but maybe one of the biggest times that people higher up the organizational ladder might have to get a look at these guys. And whether that's someone on the coaching staff, someone in ownership, like those, or an advisor to ownership, like people whose opinions will carry weight in this decision process. That's where you more worried about, you know, a guy having a good tournament run and just getting that exposure. You know, I think frankly, from the way some of the public discussion is going, and I think teams will avoid this, but, you know, Gonzaga has been so good and Jalen Suggs has been so good that people are like, oh, Jalen Suggs to be the number one pick. It's like, no, it's still Cade. Like the guy's playing with a G League quality team already. So he's getting better opportunities than anybody else. And let's not overlook everything else we know about him just because his team is curb stomping everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting because my first year in the league when the NCAA tournament was coming up, and I was really just as an intern doing all the draft prep. That's part of the reason why I don't watch college basketball is I've watched thousands and thousands of hours of college basketball for years and I'm done. But I used to ask all right, well, what are we doing in the tournament? Like, where are our scouts going for the tournament? And it was like, no, they all just get in the conference room and we fire up the TVs and watch them together because it's not like you're getting that much at this point. If you're making your draft evaluation off the NCAA tournament, you're screwed. You've screwed up the draft. You're done. And it's not like a major, major piece. There's things in there you're going to look at. You're going to watch it. You want to see how guys respond to things and so on. But Cade Cunningham getting knocked out early isn't going to affect his draft stock because the teams already know what he can do.
I think there's one area where it might be helpful, and that's the small conference guy who you want to get more. If like that's almost a way that a guy can legitimately rise is, and I think that, you know, Steph Curry saw this his second to last year at Davidson when he, you know, went off on some really good teams. Like, okay, we're worried about this guy being, you know, too small and being able to handle elite athleticism. Okay, he just went crazy on Kansas. So, you know, and you know, did it the round before and the round before. So that at least answers some of those questions or gives us a better look at some of those questions that we might have had. But that's still something you got to be very careful of because, you know, a guy could get hot for a couple of games and make a bunch of jump shots and get himself overdrafted.
I do think it is useful, though, for these guys at small colleges. Like, I mean, obviously, you always want to see them against the best competition that you can get, but it definitely adds more to the picture when you do get to see, you know, Steph Curry at Davidson play against Kansas, because the athleticism is hugely different between those top tier D1 schools and a school like Davidson or Elon or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point that Seth makes in that thing. I just think people on the outside tend to look at the NCAA tournament as the end all be all of these people's draft stock. And you'll see it on the debate shows and things. Did so-and-so hurt their draft stock or did they help their draft stock? And it's like, nah.
I think Franz Wagner probably hurt, but that's, you know.
Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, you can do it, right? But like, it's not. It's really just such a piece of the puzzle. Like I always say around the draft time, it's everything. It's all a puzzle. All of it kind of comes together. And to me, it's like not even a big piece. It's just a relatively small piece if you've done your due diligence. Now, the smaller college guys is a different story, but I'm just talking like the main guys and the guys that teams have been watching all year. It doesn't make that big of a difference.
Is there anything to the idea that playing in, you know, your conference tournament and the NCAA tournament is more like playoff basketball and maybe you can see, you know, this guy's got a different mindset or something like that? I mean, is that something that comes up in conversations offices?
No? I think it's the opposite, actually, because the big thing about playoff basketball is prep time. And especially in like a conference tournament, like it's okay, you played last night, play tonight, play tomorrow. And there's just like, well, you guys saw him play last night, so you know what he wants to do. And there's not really, you know, the same kind of, you know, he likes to snake pick and rolls when he goes left and that kind of nitty gritty you can get into in playoff prep for a team. So I think it's the pressure maybe, but like the technical aspects of it that make playoffs different. Completely not.
And it goes one step further even. You only play this team once, right, in the tournament, and that's it. You play the team in the game one of the playoffs, you play the team in game two in the playoffs, and game three, what you were doing, they've taken away. Like, there's an element to that of that. And so it's really kind of – that stuff is tough to judge, and I don't know if there's a way to really figure it out. I think that's why some of the European guys, it's easier to kind of look at – when they're in those tournaments and those championships, you get a little bit of it. It's not the same intensity or anything like that, but you can get a sense of, okay, they know, you know, like look what Luka was able to do because they all knew this shot was coming and they still couldn't stop it, kind of stuff. And I think that's something like that. I don't think anybody in the front office has ever. I've never heard it.
We all remember the guys who move up. And it's a bad thing. What did you say,
Johnny
Seth?
Johnny Flynn.
Johnny
one,
Flynn
moved up one draft slot for every overtime that the Syracuse played the Big East tournament that year.
Yeah, and but there are guys that I think move up, and it winds up being the right move. Like Kemba Walker always comes to mind. Kemba Walker's senior year, that run in the Big East tournament and the NCAA tournament is one of my favorite basketball runs of anybody. I mean, it was incredible. He was must watch TV for that whole time. And that certainly boosted his draft stock. Was there anyone else that you guys can think of that it was like, okay, he really showed us in the tournament that he's a better player than we knew?
Nobody comes to mind.
I mean, it's fine. Yeah.
Nobody comes to mind. I will say that in sort of the one and done era, there is a little bit to be said as well for, okay, a guy comes in as a 17-year-old freshman maybe, and he's one thing. Seeing the difference between that and the end of the season, like the last couple of games of the regular season, the conference tournament, the NCAAs, like seeing some growth is a good thing, because, you know, one of the biggest like misnomers of draft analysis is this guy could come in and give you minutes in an NBA game tonight. No, he couldn't. Yeah. Like, so anyone who's going to make it has to get a lot better. And so seeing someone who's gotten a lot better from October to March is a reasonably good sign that they'll get better from March to next November, which is what you need. And then from that on throughout their career. So that is something that's worth watching. But then again, that's not something you see in one or two NCAA games. That's something you see in like last couple conference games and the conference tournaments into the NCAAs. And then into kind of the pre-draft stuff with like the combine and workouts, as much as maybe we don't like workouts in heading towards the draft.
Yeah, Seth nailed it. I don't have nothing else to add.
Yeah, perfect.
We're getting along too well today.
You interrupted me earlier. You interrupted me earlier, and I begged for the cat to attack you. And so I don't know how well we're getting along. It's just,
I don't know. I feel like you guys are going to team up against me, and that doesn't bode well for either one of you guys. Oh, okay.
Day's coming.
Yeah. I mean, don't worry. Yeah, I got vacation coming up, so we'll see how that goes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another thing that has kind of been on our mind, and Seth, you wrote about this over at The Athletic on your analytical look around the other day. Crunch time. Everybody's talking about it. Nobody knows what it is. No, I'm just kidding. So the crunch time stuff in the league this year has been really interesting. And you can see a difference now from the start of the season. I think teams are starting to get a little bit more established and kind of understand what they need to do at the end of games. The practice, the no practice issue, the no training camp issue has been a real problem this season. There have been time and score things that I just haven't seen in the NBA. Marcus Smart the other night with the jump ball,
yeah,
shot clock violation. And look, man, that stuff happens all the time. It's basketball. I've coached players that have scored on the wrong basket to start.
That happens, Dave, in high school in Europe, in lower leagues in Europe and things like that. That's not supposed to happen in an NBA game. Like, come on, man. Like, I saw that and was like, what?
Yeah, I mean, I was watching Dallas and Boston, and Dallas is up four. Josh Richardson, for some reason, you know, there's like 11 seconds left, and for some reason, he's trying to dribble the ball in traffic, turns it over, and Boston gets a bucket out of it. And, you know, Dallas winds up winning that game, but it's just – that's kind of stuff that just shouldn't happen down the stretch for NBA teams.
No, there's an element of just not smart basketball sometimes. I mean, there are situations I've seen where a team's up one and all they got to do is run out the clock and the guy goes, takes the layup, you know, and it's like, no, dude, run out the clock, man. You know, like you're in the position, make them foul, you eat up time and all of those things. So I think there's all, first off, everybody's got a million different philosophies and how they will handle things in crunch time. I'm sure somebody just listened right now going like, no, be up three, you know, it's better than being, you know, all that. Like I get all, there's a million things. So it's just interesting to see how some of this goes. For me, my bigger thing is watching how the coaches use their timeouts, because the most valuable weapon in those timeouts is being able to advance the ball. And sometimes like in a crunch time game, I'll see a coach use a timeout with a minute 30 left. And I'm like, no, dude, that's killing you. And then I get excited when I see a game where there's 20 seconds left and the team that's down has two timeouts. I'm like, oh, this gives them a little more options and a little more flexibility of what they could run down the stretch.
Yeah, that timeout usage sort of plays into sort of – it's something that obviously came up a lot in sort of the tournament announcing as well. But the notion that, hey, you don't need a three here. Yes, you do. If there's ever a situation that comes up where an announcer is saying they don't need a three here, they've needed a three for 30 seconds already. It's very rare kind of exceptions to it. So sometime friend of the show, Daryl Blackport, just created a little app that allows you to plug a time and score in to know, okay, you can assume what percentage the three-pointer is with this time and score, how high a percent would the two-pointer need to be. And it's something like if you're down three with 10 seconds left, you know, oh, you can get a quick two here. Assume you're a 30% three-point shooter, you'd need like an 80-something percent two-pointer for it to be as good for your win probability. If you have a play that'll get you an 80% two-pointer, why are you waiting till now?
Right.
Yeah.
My question for you about that app, does it account for timeouts?
No. So those are timeouts, relative strength of teams, all those things do kind of, but it's sort of just like a, you know, the straight neutral math of it and adjust from there. And, you know, by and large, teams play to, quote, extend the game way more frequently than they should. Like the goal is not to get to overtime. The goal is to win. And, you know, you still lose half the time in overtime. So, you know, you're getting to overtime is not some great feat. And especially in a season where games are so close together, like getting to overtime and losing is almost a loss in a quarter, because now you've played all your guys an extra 5 minutes and you're getting on the plane late and all that fun stuff.
Why are we still debating fouling up three? Like, yeah, why is that still something that's like, I wonder if they're going to foul up three. There shouldn't be a wonder. The wonder should be, I wonder if they're going to forget to foul up three, not if they're going to call for it.
No, the execution is harder than the theory. I will say that. As good as NBA players have gotten at like rising up and creating contact on jump shots.
And how it's like, officiated.
Yeah. Like it becomes very dicey. And it's also, I mean, that is a difference between college also, since the guy who's catching the ball in that spot in the NBA game is an 80% foul shooter, probably. Right. College game, he's a 68% foul shooter. Even if you foul him,
you're fine.
You know, he's a college player. He's going to miss one. So I think that there is, you know, the execution of it is more difficult. Now the spot where it drives me crazy is a lot of teams still run a play where they like have their post player catch the ball at the elbow and run some action off him. Just run him over. if you're up three, just run him over, send that guy to the line, you win the game.
That was my problem with the Utah loss to the to the Sixers in overtime right before the All-Star break is, you know, Embiid was able to tie the game with the three. He started with the ball in the mid post. It should have just been an automatic foul.
I will say that he caught the ball with like there was like 18 seconds or something when he caught the ball. So that's a little bit of a.
You did have to go to the clock right
now.
Yeah,
you got it. Yeah.
But you got it. You got it at this point. Like you can't let him just start going, getting back to this. Now, granted, he hit a tough ass shot.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be too hard on it, but like we see it all the time. Like we've seen the Celtics run the play, right? Where they throw it cross court on the sideline out of bounds to Smart or something in the post and to kick it out to whoever's coming out for the three. And I'm like, yeah, it's everything Seth said's right. Foul right there. That's an automatic. Just put them on the
defensive
line.
Pass interference doesn't hurt you in that spot.
No, it doesn't matter. The yardage doesn't matter. They don't get the ball there.
So there's all these bad crunch time things, and then there's Damian Lillard, and there's just not an explanation.
He gets to do whatever the hell he wants. Period.
Yeah, Seth, in your article you wrote about the expected win percentage of teams entering crunch time, and Charlotte and Portland are overwhelmingly winning more games than they should in crunch time. And you know, Portland is only doing it because of Damian Lillard. That's literally, like, you can point and you can say this guy in crunch time is unlike any other player. The only guy that comes close to him in crunch time is Nikola Jokic. He's the only guy. And he doesn't do it with the degree of difficulty that Damian Lillard does. Because Jokic finds a small and he gets that post up, and obviously that's a bucket. Damian Lillard is pulling up from 30. He's snaking pick and rolls and taking threes. And that guy is just completely unstoppable under 5 minutes in a five-minute game. I can't wrap my head around that.
So, wild stat for you on this. There's a website called Inpredictable, which has a model that does win probability based on time and score, stuff like that. He's got Mike Bowie is the guy's name who runs it. He has a stat called win probability added, which is basically like, yeah, if you take a shot or turn the ball over or do something, what is the change in the win probability for your team from one moment to the next based on that? Over the last 2 years, and I haven't looked at it today, but over the last 2 years, Damian Lillard has added something like 17 wins worth of win probability with his kind of clutch time play. To like, that's just a stupid, enormous, gigantic number. Like, that's, you know, 8 wins a year is the difference between, you know, making the playoffs and home court in some years. And frankly, it's actually kind of the difference for Portland this year. They're in non-clutch situations. They're under 500. They are – can I drop the stat now, Dave?
Yeah. Do it.
So Portland has like a 62% winning percentage this year. On the season, they've been outscored by 10 points. The last time a team had a 60% winning percentage while being outscored in the season was 1953-54.
Oh, basketball was really good. The golden age.
Yeah. The 1953-54 New York Knicks of Harry the Horse Gallatin won like 43 games despite being outscored on the season.
Look, real hoopers remember.
So. Yeah. So, but that's just the impact of Lillard on these close games, how much kind of better than their overall play the Blazers record is. And because it's the second year in a row he's done it, you don't even want to say, well, that's fluky. They're going to come back down to earth. With like Charlotte, who is massively outperforming their clutch time play anyway, they're shooting 50% in the clutch from three. So it's like, okay, well, that's not something that we're going to keep going. But for Portland, there is
Charlotte's a little bit more fluky. Yeah.
Why it's called Dame time.
Portland
it's
is Dame
time, guys. It's Dame time.
I've just never seen anything like that.
Can we petition the league to change the clutch stat to just Dame time stats?
I mean, it's something. I don't know what it is about him. I mean, it's almost like a life hack. Like, he's just figured out, you know what? I'm going to trust the numbers here and the percentages and my own ability. And it just works out every single freaking time. That's the scariest thing in the world. And I think that when you look ahead to the playoffs, it's part of why I always give Portland more of a chance than maybe I ought to, because Damian Lillard is just a factor. He's going to be a factor in any single game he's in, especially if they can keep it close. And they now have the talent that they can pretty much keep it close with anybody. And so you get into a lot of these toss-up games where maybe Dame hasn't had a great game. That's okay, because they got him to the last 5 minutes, and then, you know, he becomes Superman. So I don't really know what you do about that. I mean, obviously it hasn't resulted in a championship yet, but I mean, you're telling me that maybe this year Dame couldn't get super hot in the playoffs?
Yes.
And yeah, it's not going to happen. well, as we wrap up, what are you guys looking ahead to this week? Sorry, Portland.
Damn. Jeez. Go, Seth. Since you already crushed Portland. Go, Seth. What are you looking at?
No, I'm still gonna like, you know, we mentioned the Nuggets starting to get some higher quality opposition that they're going. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
It's not Portland. Yeah. Not Portland. You're not gonna be checking out Portland some more?
The Nuggets.
Good Lord. Damn, just close.
What about you, Mo?
I was going to watch Portland, but I guess they don't have much of a chance, so I'm not really going to watch them. You know, Dave, I don't really have anything. I'm just kind of going to watch hoops and see what pops off. I don't have any one thing right now.
I'm really watching the middle of the pack. It's so jumbled, and I think over the course of the next few weeks, we're really going to see some separation. I mean, we're already seeing it post deadline with the teams that have decided, hey, it's not our year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander shut down. Probably, I would guess, it's going to wind up being the rest of the season. They're going to look at him again later on. We're going to watch a lot of the Thunder, which I know is a weird thing to say, but you know, I talked to Andrew Schleck too much, and he's got me excited about some of their young guys. Moses Brown is awesome, by the way. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to really dig in on him.
Nice. Thanks for reading my power rankings. That's nice, dude.
Oh, yeah. I did not read your power rankings. I'm sorry, Mo. But the Oklahoma City Thunder have some fun stuff going on, so I'm going to try to dig in on them a little bit. That's going to do it for this week, folks. Thanks for listening, as always. For Seth and for Mo, I'm Dave. We'll be back next week with another episode of Nerdist She Wrote right here on the Athletic NBA Show.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.